It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 317. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, the Phillies won a series against the New York Mets, and just when you thought you were out, they pull you back in. And the Phillies have a good weekend, and so they are back in the wild card race, I guess, technically. And so we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about, is September baseball killing you inside slowly, deeply, painfully? I believe that it is. We'll talk about a couple Phillies hitters who are red hot right now, and we'll do a quickie mailbag edition of the podcast. It's not going to be a full mailbag. We'll answer a couple of mailbag questions towards the end of the show. And because we are chatting here on Sunday night, I'm joined by my two pals talking Phil's baseball with you. My only two pals, I guess the way I worded that, it sounds like I have like two friends in the entire world. But for the sake of this podcast, let's say that's true. And Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Fight, you can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Justin, how you feeling, buddy?
They didn't not win a series, so totally still counts, even though you might think they're totally non-factor at this point. But yeah, it was kind of nice to see them win a series, especially after how devastatingly they lost the first game of that series. That was nice to see them pull it out, frankly. And I'm trying to maintain a positive attitude here. You know, they're in the playoff race. You know, they're in it. This is technically exciting. This is technically what we watch for. You know, this is I can't say that they've played
ourselves of this.
They haven't put themselves in this position as much as they've sort of been gifted this position, but they are in it, and they've played enough into the middle of September to still be in it. So hey, you know, whatever. At this point, it's a little easier because everybody's going to be watching the Eagles anyway. So now it's just like they can play without anybody looking at them. Maybe that's been the problem all along.
Yeah, too much attention, too many eyes. You can feel the looks from the fans of Philadelphia. But you're right. Everybody's going to be pretty much into Eagles football. It's nice to see the Eagles come back and win that game against Washington here on Sunday. But we're not talking football. We're going to talk to Liz Rocher as well from Yahoo Sports. You can follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, Phillies take 2 out of 3 from New York, and now just 2 games back of the wild card here in the National League. I mean, it's just amazing. They suck you back in when they spit you out, and then they suck you back in again. They spit you out. It's just... It's really disgusting the way I described it, but that's really kind of how this 2019 season has been summed up. So where are you on all this, Liz?
I'm dying.
Wow.
I'm so tired.
I don't blame you. No, I hear you.
I'm so tired. You guys, are you? I'm trying to maintain a positive attitude, and it's just not working. Like, they're in the playoff hunt, and it's great, but I just can't get rid of the sense of doom that if they make it, if by some miracle they manage to pull it together or every other team falls apart and they manage to make it, I can't get it out of my head that they're just going to get clobbered. I will hope for them to not get clobbered, but I feared that they will. And now I'm thinking, do I want to go through that with a team that has treated me this way during
the
whole
year?
You know
what? If they get eliminated in the playoffs, it'll be quick. It won't be 162 games. It'll be a 5-game series that they blow it, and it'll be over quick, or it'll be one game playoff.
The one game playoff,
and it's just over.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be quick.
That's true.
I would be okay with that at this point. You know, I mean, if they give me a September to remember, you know, they give me a good pennant race and the other teams kind of falter, and they do it against all of these teams that are over 500 that they're going to play here over the next 17 games. I mean, I'm looking at they have 17 games against the Braves, Red Sox, Indians, and Nationals. If they somehow win enough games to actually win the wild card, I'll be fine. Even if they lose that wild card game, it'll be a big step forward for this team, and it'll actually make me feel encouraged about next year.
I mean, there's been all kinds of terrible things that have spun out of this team this year, and a lot of frustrating on the field things as well. But wouldn't seeing them make a playoff spot here at the end of September, isn't that what we've been watching for this entire time anyway? Isn't that what we're watching for in general? I mean, like, you got to be hoping for it at least. Maybe it's probably a bold statement to say it makes it all worth it, but all you'll have at the end of this, if they make the playoffs, is, you know, a positive feeling that one day that they made it. And that kind of like doesn't eliminate everything, but it's sort of like the Bryce Harper negotiation. We slogged along all winter and then they finally signed him. And it was like, you know what? We're never going to remember how truly how much of a slog those months were. We're just going to remember that he's on the team. So, I, you know, at this point,
good point.
They're the team they're going to be.
Yeah, I wish I had enjoyed the season more because I feel like that would help me enjoy this more. I think that's a lot of what I'm reacting to because I'm looking back on, you know, a season full of really tough baseball. You know, there have been some really great moments, some really fun moments, but it's been hard. And I feel like this is a team that could have a lot of personality. And they're not being allowed to show it? I don't know what the deal is.
I think part of it is we weren't ready for a team like this. We've been watching, at this point, the very bad, the lean years that have started since 2012. Correct me if I'm wrong, if my very simple math is wrong. But that bad stretch of years is now longer than the golden stretch of years that we sort of came up on.
Oh, right, yeah.
And so we've kind of maybe forgotten what it's like to struggle along with the team and think that there will be a positive outcome at the end of it and not just a negative one.
Oh, yeah, no, that's totally true.
You know, we aren't trained as we were in 2007. I think maybe this team's going to pull out, or maybe 2008 because we just watched the 2007
team.
2008
and 2009 probably, yeah.
You know, and this team was expected not to be a team that fought down to the wire. It was supposed to be a team that kind of buried the other teams and ran out ahead of everybody else and negated the need for a September run. But they didn't do that, and they're this kind of team. And I think maybe we just weren't trained, and it sort of faded from our fandom instincts to follow a team to the end of the line like this.
Well, what's made this season...
end of the line last year was
the early August. August was the end of the line last year.
Yeah.
What's made this season really tough is that they've done this. They've beaten good teams. They've had good series against good teams, teams that are over 500, and then have failed to take advantage of the weaker teams to really put themselves in a stronger position. And that's what's been most frustrating because you think, well, this is a good team if it can beat some other good teams, and then they play down to the level of their competition, and you realize they can't be a playoff team if they're playing this poorly against bad teams. But then they whiplash you back the other way like they did this weekend. And the Mets aren't a good team, but they're over 500. They've been about what the Phillies have been this year, and so it's tough to play a divisional opponent on the road, one that's over 500, that's fighting for a wild card right along with you. And so, you know, here they are, two games back with 20 games to play. They do have another team in front of them. I mean, it's who's in front of them right now? They're a half a game behind Arizona, and they're tied with the Brewers now, two back behind Chicago. But Chicago can't get their act together, and you know, Milwaukee gets on a little hot streak, but then they fall apart. And it's just like the Phillies, you know, they can't get more than a four-game winning streak going so far this year, but Maybe now's the time they do it. I don't like, you know, we are on this roller coaster, man. I mean, it is up and down and up and down. And right now, I think you just have to ride the roller coaster this September. And you know, you might not get much of a wave here. You might not get much of a peak because, I mean, Aaron Nola they've lost his last three starts. He's going to get the start in the series opener against the Braves, and he could falter again, and then we could be having a totally different conversation.
Man, yeah, the rest of this schedule. I mean, I know we talked about the rest of their schedule earlier in the month, and now the rest of their schedule is the rest of that schedule, which is the Braves, Indians, 5 games in 4 days against the Nationals, and then 3 against the Marlins, which is a very small amount of games. Wow. I'm sorry. I'm reading that. I started too late in the month. It's the Braves, then the Red Sox, then the Braves again. Then
there you go.
Everything's said. But I think, honestly, at this point, yeah, you got to just either you've accepted what this team is, which is anything on any given night, understanding that they're pretty much driving a car with 3 spare tires. And on their best nights, 2 out of their like 4 components are actually functioning the way they should. And they're trying to like beat themselves as well as the other team. Like the offense is trying to beat the bullpen, or the bullpen's trying to hold the very slim lead the offense was only able to provide. And they kind of need a boost, I feel like, on like the benefits of having like a Pete Alonso, or like we saw with the Mets, or any of the young stars in the NL East, or any of the big pickups that some of these other teams made. And honestly, seeing Michael Franco again, I was like, you know what? The way he batters the Mets, like, he's not, obviously we know who he is and there's a reason he was sent down to AAA, but seeing him play the Mets again and wondering why he wasn't playing the Mets over Brad Miller in that one game against the Mets was just a reminder of, like, you know what? Yeah, he should not play every game, but we got that five-game series against the Nationals. He also plays the Nationals really well. And if you're really a stat guy, and if you really want to throw stuff at the wall and throw all these like bodies from this new expanded roster at the problem in these last few weeks where anything goes because anything has to go, just play Michael Franco, like hold him back, but play him against the Nationals more so than anything, because, you know, he's one of the only other teams. It's the only other team other than the Mets that he sees regularly and that he's hitting over 300 against. Like, I don't know what else to do at this point, but just, you got to pull the levers and push the buttons that make sense. And that's one of them, because the Phillies don't have a Pete Alonso and they don't have a Ronald Acuna, and they're playing these teams that do. So I that's one of the things that's been frustrating. I don't want to get into too much more. Like, every thought is bleeding into another right now. Clearly, yeah. I'm having some sort of brain problem. But that's where Gabe Kapler's decision making is factoring into some of my frustrations. But that's been all season long.
Yeah, and I heard you guys did a great job talking about some of the decisions that he made in the Cincinnati series. It was a really good conversation on the last Continued Success you guys did, and it continued in the series against the Mets. And I want to talk about that here in just a second. But I thought, Liz, this line from Corey Seidman's Gamer after the game here on Sunday for NBC Sports Philadelphia was interesting, and I wanted to ask this question to you because he started off his piece with a question. If you were told on opening day or even at the All-Star break that the Phillies would lose so many key players to injury and go half the season with their top players underperforming, how would a two-game deficit with 20 to play sound to you? And when you put it in that context, I think this is about as much as – maybe this is as much as we could have hoped for. You know, I mean, but that's where it comes back to what I was talking about a little bit earlier. As you follow this team along throughout the course of the season, you see so many missed opportunities to be in a better position when you lose series to the Marlins and you lose series to the Pirates and the Padres and these teams that are not very good after doing the hard work of beating the Red Sox two straight in Boston and doing the hard work of sweeping the Cubs at home. Liz, that's what this team has been so frustrating. They shouldn't be two games back with 20 to play. They should probably be in the co-lead with the Cubs right now if they'd taken care of the business they needed to take care of. But that all being said, two games back with 20 to play, losing 7/8 of your bullpen to start the season and losing McCutcheon and, you know, some of these guys underperforming all year, it really is amazing they are where they are.
It makes me feel like an idiot for being annoyed. Because it is a good – it's where you want to be. They're in the race for the last wild card spot of a play-in. You know, you wanted them to be better, but in the end, how could we expect them to be better? And it feels stupid to have, you know. But again, when you watch as many games as we do, and yeah, you see everything, like, you, this is one of those seasons where you remember a lot of the bad things. You remember a lot of the stupid moments and the missed chances, and it, you know, maybe that's just from living through so many years and, you know, managing a blog during those years where I was experiencing some of them up close, and I'm just not able to let go of them like a normal person. Yeah.
You wrote a lot of game recaps, Liz.
maybe that's my issue and I'm weird like that. And that's entirely possible because I'm having a tough time getting into the fun of all of it. I need help, I guess. Listeners, help me get into the fun of this.
I think, Liz, it's going to take a mindset change. Because when we came into the season, we saw a team that could win the division. And we have to recalibrate because they're clearly not as good as the Braves. They're clearly not as good as the Nationals. They are the third best team in this division. I think that's pretty safe to say pretty clearly. They are big steps behind those other two teams. And yet, they might still make the playoffs. But when we came into the season, I think there was the sense that the Phillies had the, if not far and away the best roster of all the teams in the National League East. I know a lot of people were saying that this was going to be a tight four-team race in the NL East. I don't know if we all bought into that quite as much, but
we
I think we
talked about it for like 5 weeks. We definitely did.
Right. So we all thought that we were on an even footing with the Nationals and the Braves, Justin, and to see that you're not, and to see that you've definitely that there's a lot of work to do to catch up to those other teams. I think that's part of where some of the disappointment that Liz is talking about is coming in here, because yes, they could still make the playoffs here. They are just two games out of the wild card, but we weren't thinking wild card at the start of the season. We weren't thinking about sneaking into the playoffs as the third place team in the National League East.
Yeah, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago now. I remember I asked you guys, like, are you able to enjoy a baseball game, a Phillies game, just in a vacuum and not think about the repercussions? And I think that's kind of the problem, is that we look at this from, like, the overall, what does this mean for the next win? What does this mean according to the standings? And obviously the standings factor now more than ever in September. But I feel like the question of, oh, well, did you, you know, knowing everything that happened to the Phillies this year, isn't two games out like a pretty solid place for this team to be in? I mean, yeah, when you ask the question like that, sure, but that glosses over an awful lot, I feel like. And, and that's kind of, that's putting things in a neat little, it's kind of without context. And I think a lot of the reasons we were frustrated throughout the season was because they didn't look like a team that would stay in contention. They didn't look like a team that if it was in contention, they'd be able to do much. But I mean, at this point, we've just crossed over that threshold. There's no more work to be done with this team. You know, it's September. The trade deadline has come and gone. You know, the only thing that's going to happen is the team might get, I'm knocking on wood, worse because, you know, injuries happen and you have to, like, fill in. But other than that, this team's not going to undergo any purposeful changes moving forward. It's kind of up to Gabe Kapler to arrange these additional 15 chess pieces and the 25 original ones into the best possible team in his estimation, and just embrace the chaos that results from that. I mean, this is a team that has defined itself through inconsistency, and if you look at that in a positive light, you kind of just got to say, yeah, well, if anything can happen, you know, like, if anything can happen, then this team can beat the Braves enough times to make it to the playoffs. Like, it doesn't have to, the Phillies don't have to beat the Braves 20 times out of 29 matchups or whatever throughout the season anymore. They just kind of have to win now regardless of who they're playing. And once they get to the playoffs, that becomes even more true. So at this point, they're the team they're going to be. And they're a team for which anything has happened, except for that win streak we've been waiting for. But they're a team for which, you know, they've won in every way possible. They've lost seemingly every way possible. So when the first pitch happens against the Braves tomorrow night, I mean, it's sort of like buy in or don't, but just understand that anything can happen with this team. And at this point in the season, that's more of a blessing than a curse.
Yeah, and I think also some of the losses that they've had this year have been really deflating. Like, they've lost a lot of really, really tough games, you know, especially this week with all the comebacks that they had in Cincinnati in the last two games of that series to fall short with some relievers that just boggle the mind that they have been put in these positions to have to succeed in a pennant race in high leverage situations. And, you know, we're going to get into some of that, but again, you guys talked a lot about that on the last Continued Success. But, you know, again, I want to get into the first game of the Mets series where I was not happy with how Kapler used his bullpen. But I do want to point out that in this game on Sunday, we've seen the Phillies this season come up small against teams like the Marlins and against like teams like the Mets and other not great teams when they had an opportunity to really step forward. And then in this game on Sunday, they and in other games this season, they've also shown that they do have some heart every now and then. They were down 3-0 early against Noah Syndergaard when Vince Velasquez came out in the first inning, and I think he took him 45 minutes or something like that to get through the bottom half of the first inning. It was just a terrible performance by Velasquez early, and then he settled down a little bit. But you know, to fall down 3-0 against Syndergaard and fight their way back, it's something they did in the Cincinnati series, too. They've been doing that more lately, especially in a game in which Harper and Realmuto didn't start, Liz. I mean, so here's what we've got a situation where we've seen the Phillies come up small in different situations, but lately they've been fighting back, at least the offense has, and you just think to yourself, man, if this team had a little bit more pitching, what could they do? What could they be doing here late in the season? Because I don't know if you guys are aware of this, since August 1st, the Phillies have scored the 10th most runs in the majors. The offense has turned it around since the beginning of August.
That's such a 2019 Phillies stat. The
10th
saying the 10th most runs with the inflections and positive enthusiasm in your voice.
Well, in the majors, when they were 23rd or 24th the whole season, you know, I'm talking about in the majors, that's top 10 in the majors is pretty good.
That's top three. I was going to say the same. It's a top third in all of baseball. Absolutely. That is pretty good.
I'll take it, you know.
I'll take it as opposed to not taking it, but it's also, you know, they're top 10 by the skin of their teeth. They're only technically top 10 because they are 10th. You know, it feels like a weirdly dubious thing. I mean, no, I mean, what I'm saying is it feels like a strangely dubious thing to be super thrilled about.
I'm looking at where they came from. Does the offense seem like it's been a problem? Well, I guess the way over the last month plus, it feels like the offense has been doing their job. The offense has been doing their part, where for most of the season, it felt like they were a real hindrance. And I think, you know, there's a game here and there, a few games here and there where the offense doesn't show up. But, you know, that's most teams. You know, not every team is going to be the Red Sox scoring 5.5 runs every night.
Yeah. I guess that's true. I guess I'm feeling very down on the Phillies, but I also, I don't know. I have a tough time being ultra positive about this team. I just feel so beaten down by them in a lot of ways.
Well, that's fair. I mean, they definitely have hurt us this year. There's no doubt about it. So, I mean, two wins against the Mets to finish off this series certainly isn't enough to start, you know, making reservations for October. But
well,
yeah,
no, I mean, part of my problem is that I just continue to have issues with Gabe Kapler all the time.
Yeah.
I have a really difficult time with him as manager, and I would like him to not be manager.
Let's get into that after the break. We'll step away, take a quick break, because I do want to get into some of the decisions Kapler made, especially in the first game of the series against the Mets. And, you know, I know you guys talked a lot about, again, a terrific job. I was listening as I was driving around Saturday or Friday, and you guys were saying everything I was thinking about bringing up on this podcast this week. So make sure you listen to the latest Continued Success after you listen to this podcast. But we'll talk a little bit more about Gabe Kapler up next here on Hit and Season. And we're back on Hit and Season. John Stolness along with Justin Clue and Liz Rocher talking about a Phillies series victory against the New York Mets. Phillies now just two games behind the Cubs in the National League wild card, and they still have to leapfrog Arizona. They're tied with the Brewers, but in the mix here with 20 games left to play, 17 of which against winning opponents. Let's talk a little bit about Gabe Kapler, because he made a very interesting decision in the start with the starting lineup on Friday. A decision I just found completely ridiculous. Starting Jose Perella over Corey Dickerson on Friday night because the Mets were starting Steven Matz, a left-handed pitcher, because I don't think, you know, Corey Dickerson has ever gotten a hit against a left-handed pitcher. This was one of those situations where, guys, he started Perella because if you look at the career statistics, Perella has an 808 OPS against left-handed pitching, and none of the other Phillies players, we're talking about Corey Dickerson and Jay Bruce, Nick Williams, Adam Haseley, had as good an OPS against left-handers in their careers. Looking at all of their career numbers, neglecting the fact that Perella has had 5 at-bats at the major league level total this year. And I just thought, I mean, this is one of those situations, Justin, I think you mentioned in the first segment, talking about, you know, using the right kind of statistics, using the right kind of analytics, looking at the right numbers. Like, what numbers are we looking at here when we're making these decisions? Because I think you got to look at the number of at-bats a guy has had this year and weight that somewhere close to the same as career OPS going back years and years and years against left-handed pitching. And especially, you know, we're talking about a guy like Corey Dickerson who has gotten a ton of big hits for this team since joining the Phillies. I think there was a time he had more RBIs in games played, like 25 RBIs in 24 games or something like that. People were talking about how can we squeeze him onto this roster next year? How can we give him a 3-year deal, you know, at $17 million a year? And you're starting Perella over him in a game you have to have? You have to win these games. Every one of these games is important. That made absolutely no sense to me, and I don't think it made a whole lot of sense to anybody else. And I don't know that we ever got a real explanation about Perella over Dickerson. So, Justin, I mean, is that kind of piggybacks on some really questionable calls that were made in the games in Cincinnati that you and Liz talked about?
Yeah, it just worrying, I guess, is the word you use in that case, because I don't know, maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but it's starting to seem like decisions like this are getting more and more blatantly robotic. And that was exactly what we were warning against or concerned about earlier when, you know, earlier in all of this, earlier when Gabe Kapler arrived, earlier when analytics became a topic of debate. I mean, we're really repeating ourselves to suggest that analytics is a tool and not a philosophy. It should be something that's part of what you do, but not entirely what you do. And, you know, we've seen signs maybe that was or wasn't what Gabe Kapler was doing, but it just seems like that religious adherence to one thing over another. You know, we saw that in his first game when he took Aaron Nola out, despite the success he was having. And then to see something like that without a real explanation, which is confusing why we never really got a clear explanation for that. I feel like
you did get an explanation. That was the explanation. I mean, that was it.
Just,
like that,
I guess you're just dying to hear that confirmed because it's such a it's such a blind.
There's no other
blind
thing
adherence
could be
to that. I mean, why?
Corey Dickerson is a bad baseball player. It's like you can't trust him to just get hits like a good baseball player does. That's what I don't understand. And I don't think Gabe Kapler is alone. I think this is a symptom of modern managing and why people are longing for guys like Dusty Baker, who used his gut every now and then and trusted his hitters, trusted his players. The decision-making that we're seeing in baseball today is so far from that. If it isn't backed up by a number, no manager wants to touch it. And it's really frustrating, and that is exactly what Gabe Kapler does.
I mean, it seems like all the evidence you'd need is that, I mean, this is exactly what we're saying, but all the evidence you'd need was the success Dickerson had been having at the plate.
Right.
To know that, yeah, he's a professional baseball player. I mean, yeah, his slugging numbers drop against lefties, but the rest of his numbers are pretty much, you know, his numbers against lefties are a little lower, but they essentially hold fast. It's more just like, this is a guy who's been in the league for a little while, and, you know, he hits righties a little bit better than lefties, but I wouldn't say doesn't look like he struggled against them. Throwing Jose Perella in there is just like an attempt to look like a genius for starting
this
guy
from
nowhere. Mm-hmm. And look what happened. I mean, what, he had a hit single, he had a walk, but I mean, you know, he didn't look like a savior out there. Certainly wasn't a reason that they were in the game and they wound up losing. But like, yeah, it just, he's got a, Perella has a 290 batting average and an 809 OPS against lefties right now. Dickerson's got a 272 batting average and a 710 OPS. I mean, if that really feels like it's going to be the difference in winning or losing, I guess. But it just seems like if you're going to do that, you got a lot of homework to do before each and every game to determine who's got the best OPS.
What else is
whoever's
his job if he's
day.
Not managing? If he's not managing the clubhouse, what else is his job other than doing that type of homework and asking the analytics department to do that type of homework too?
I mean, that's just overmanaging. That plain and simple. That's overmanaging. That's outthinking yourself. That's getting too cute for the room.
Well, it's
overmanaged. It's Jose Perella.
It's overmanaging.
There's no world in which
it's overmanaging and yet undermanaging, because it's not trusting yourself and you know, using actual your brain. You're doing nothing but trusting stats on a page to guide your decision making. You're not using your eyes or anything else. You're not even using more current numbers. You're just using what you see on Baseball Reference. Like, there's more than that. And I'm sure there probably was more that went into that decision, blah, blah, whatever. But it's so frustrating. Like, you saw it today with Mickey Callaway acting like
this guy.
If there is a manager stupider than I feel that Gabe Kapler is sometimes, because I don't believe he is stupid. I believe he makes a number of stupid decisions. But if there's a guy that does that more, it is Mickey Callaway, the brain genius.
Man, you know, earlier this season, the Inquirer put out a story about Pete Alonso and Rhys Hoskins perhaps being these two NL East rival sluggers for generations to come. I'll be honest, I'm so much more interested in Gabe Kapler and Mickey Callaway being rival brain-farting geniuses for the rest of whatever their time left in their current positions are, because watching those two trying to outmanage each other with these little Jose Perella walking, who they walked to get to Harper?
They walked
Andrew
Mann
to get to Harper.
To load the bases to get to Bryce Harper because they wanted the Phillies to sub out Mike Morin.
because
guys, why don't you start making simple, smart baseball moves, then graduate to the brilliant Joe Maddon stuff. Really, you know, work your way up. Don't show up and think you're going to run the table because you signed Jose Perella for depth. Like, come on.
What's even more mind-numbing is that he made this decision because he was using the amount of time that it wasn't even stats of the bullpen. He wanted to get Mike Morin out of the game because he was the best rested reliever.
Love it.
And that was it. And he gave
it. And you know what? It probably drove Kapler crazy. He was like, oh, man, he got us. Oh, he knew how much rest Mike Morin had had. I forgot to consider that.
He walked Andrew Knapp to bring up Bryce Harper, the second most prolific walker in baseball.
And Harper draws the bases loaded walk, gets an all-important run. It was just an unbelievably terrible decision by Mickey Callaway, who has made many of them.
That he talked about with his mouth into a microphone.
Like it
was a defendable thing and like this was normal. Like, Gabe Kapler might not use anything but his brain, but thank God it's not whatever's happening over there. What is happening?
Do you think? Well, what's hilarious also just makes the acquisition of Jason Vargas. I mean, when we signed him, that makes that even funnier. That like there was this disruption in the Mets locker room earlier this year where Mickey Callaway got into it with a reporter. Jason Vargas wanted to fight a reporter, and you know we don't hear anything from the Phillies clubhouse. What makes you wonder? How much stuff like that has gone down in there this season? Like unpleasant stuff that Gabe Kapler, one of his priorities has been to just keep a lid on everything. It just makes you wonder, because in the similarities we see between the parallels you can so easily draw between these two teams and now like their two managers, makes you wonder what sort of Met stuff has been happening in the Phillies locker room that we just don't know about.
Hey, by the way, was something we should mention before we move on. You mentioned Vargas and Stroman. Vargas has actually been a more productive and better pitcher, a better pickup than Marcus Stroman has for the Mets. I think in seven starts, Vargas has been worth twice as much
chaos.
Of a replacement.
Yeah, just Drew totally Smiley weird. Went seven shutout innings.
Just
crazy.
Yeah, what is going on? Here's
we're
the
being
thing
played
that
with.
or they're the biggest geniuses who ever lived.
Well, here's a non-genius move, and this is, I think, the thing that I had the biggest problem with Gabe Kapler, maybe so far this year, but one of them was once again, like in game number two against the Atlanta Braves last year, his second ever game when he brought the who was the relief pitcher that he brought in?
Hobie Milner.
We had almost an exact duplicate of that situation in that same game in the game on Friday night when he didn't give Hector Neris enough time to warm up and the umpire had to walk out to the warning track to get Hector Neris to come in the game because Kapler went out to the mound after Neris had thrown three warm-up pitches in the bullpen and was just standing around trying to give Neris enough time to warm up to come into the game. And, you know, Neris says he had enough time to warm up, but it was obvious.
That's clearly and a lie.
Right, and the broadcasters were noting how odd this was and how crazy this was. And
I mean, how would you be able to tell? He walks the first two batters he faces anyway every time.
But nevertheless, Hector Neris definitely. You're right, Justin. It's not exactly 1-2-3 Neris most nights when he's out there. But this is a situation where Kapler did not have a good handle on thinking two moves ahead, three moves ahead, and I think that's something we see a lot of, and that's something that I was hoping that we would see him do better with here in his second season with the Phillies is in the middle of a game. I mean, obviously, game planning wise, Kapler was thinking a couple moves ahead when he had Perella in the game because he's thinking in the fourth or fifth or sixth inning when they bring in the right-hander, we'll swap everybody out and we'll put Dickerson in, we'll put Haseley in, or whatever it is that we're going to do. He's trying to think ahead before the game, but when things are happening and things are moving quickly and stuff is spiraling out of control quickly, he's not quick enough to think, let's get Neris up to start the inning in case we run into trouble because we'll have Alonso and Conforto and all these different guys coming up here. And so that was a situation he ran into on Friday. Was Neris certainly didn't appear that he had his normal amount of warm-up pitches that he would get before coming into a game, and Neris then proceeded to give up two runs, and that was largely the ball game after that. So that, to me, with Justin, was an even bigger deal, that he, once again, did not learn from that mistake and hasn't really improved with in-game decision-making.
Something maybe people forgot to consider when this new era of managing started, when it became the norm to hire these like younger managers who are more in tune with what the younger general managers want to do as far as analytics goes, who have something, we were leaning a lot more heavily, in my opinion, in Gabe Kapler's case, too heavily on the analytics side of things. I wonder if anybody bothered to check in before they started their jobs and make sure they knew how to do the executable jobs of a manager when you're on the field, like where to point and sit and where do you put your lunch and which drawer is yours and where the office, like just the normal stuff. Because that first day, that Hobie Milner situation that just entered your brain when you saw that happen and the explanation for it afterwards, it just entered your brain like, oh, yeah. Does anybody, like, do these guys have orientation? Like, I forgot to consider that maybe he sat down in that interview and wowed them with exactly what they wanted to hear as far as what he wanted to do, as far as player diets and culture and communication. And it was all stuff they wanted to hear, but they just forgot that, oh, yeah, managing with your gut includes knowing what's going on and having an awareness around you. And, like, I don't want to come down so hard that I don't think Gabe Kapler knows what's happening in front of his face. But when something like that happens early on, it's like, okay, he's new, it's just, yeah, it's the first game. It sucks, and we'll be talking about this forever. But maybe it's just a blip on the radar early on. But then something like that happens again. Here we are, 2 years late. Well, a year later, and it's just like, huh, we still doing this? Really?
Yeah.
And let's not forget, Mickey Callaway once submitted an incorrect lineup card and batted his own players out of order.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, some of these managers who have never done this before have succeeded. Aaron Boone is doing quite well with the Yankees. Alex Cora won a World Series in his first year. I think Dave Martinez with Washington has bounced back after a very rocky first year.
I think they still hate him. I think they still hate him. They're winning, which makes it better. And Aaron Boone, if he had anything less than what he has, granted, the Yankees have had a lot of injuries this year, but they've had players come out of nowhere, and that has had nothing to do with Aaron Boone.
Well, then let me ask you this with Kapler, given all of the injuries that he has had this year, and he's had to deal with a lot of injuries, and you wonder, there's been a lot of underperformance from the players, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, and this kind of reflects back on the Corey Seidman question I asked at the beginning of the podcast, but does Kapler get any credit for having this team over 500 for as much of the season as he has, as they have been, given the fact that they have virtually no good relief pitchers on this roster, that every starting pitcher other than Aaron Nola completely went in the tank this season?
He feels like it's in spite of him.
My instinct is to say it's in spite of him, but we don't talk about it when Gabe Kapler makes great decisions. We talk about it when he makes mistakes, like we're doing right now. So what is an example of a moment where Gabe Kapler managed the hell out of a game or outmanaged the other manager without outmanaging himself?
It's when he gets out of his own way. Yeah. That's the thing. A good manager is a good manager half the time because you don't notice when he does something because he puts the right guy in that you would expect to see in the on-deck circle. You bring in the reliever that, doesn't walk a guy immediately. And granted, Kapler hasn't had a ton of those guys. But it's not like he's used anyone better or done anything differently to make up for this, I don't think, at least in my opinion. So I think a lot of the success is kind of in spite of him.
The argument I keep seeing is people saying, this is Kapler's fault, he's a terrible decision maker, and other people saying, no, it's not. He can only play with the players that he's been given, and the front office didn't do a good enough job giving him good players. I don't really understand why we're not saying it's both, because it clearly is.
I think it is both.
Clearly both.
Yeah. No, that's fair. He definitely does not have enough weapons at his disposal right now. I have a hard time ripping Gabe Kapler. I mean, not Gabe Kapler, Matt Klentak, for what he did this offseason, because the team that he put together this offseason we thought was good enough to win the division. Everybody thought this was a good bullpen. I think most people thought the starting rotation was a pitcher short, but not four pitchers short. And everybody thought that this offense was going to hit. And for much of the season, the offense didn't hit. Only one of the starting pitchers turned out to be good. And he lost 7/8 of the bullpen by midseason. So those are serious headwinds to have to overcome. But we've seen a lot of the mental mistakes. We've seen a lot of the mistakes that have been made that didn't need to be made. And you couple those things together, and it's hard to get a real sense of what has, what part of this 2019 season is Kapler's fault or responsibility? Because with Matt Klentak, I think the problem was that he didn't give Kapler enough help in season. He didn't get him enough help with the bullpen in season. Mike Morin and Hughes and Parker and all these guys were not good enough additions in season to allow Kapler to play the bullpen game in September like he wants to. One of the things you guys were talking about on the continued success was, you know, Kapler wants to play this bullpen game. He doesn't want his starting pitchers like Velasquez or Smiley to go too deep into these games because he knows hitters are going to start to wail on their stuff the third time through. But he doesn't have the horses to play that kind of game. Klentak didn't give him that material to use, and so now he's trying to play that game and ram that square peg into a round hole, and it's not working.
You know, I think something to consider here is that Matt Klentak might be pretty okay at acquiring players when they're position players. You know, like when he's acquired hitters for this team, they, you know, he's Corey Dickerson. Dickerson's hitting 300. Bruce was a great pickup for them. You know, Jose Bautista wasn't great last year, but he was sort of a panic move, I feel like, thrown in at the last second. They were adding a ton of guys last year. I mean,
Asdrubal Cabrera was the one that just didn't work out. Yeah, but Wilson was a good at last year when he was healthy.
I was going to say Justin Bour, you know, he didn't look great once he joined the team, but they picked him up after he hit like 3 home runs in 4 days while playing against them, which I was like, hey, I respect that. They were like, we can't beat this guy and we need some power. Let's grab him. So I didn't hate any of those moves, really. As Drupal Cabrera, we came to hate, John, you're right. But like you said, that was a move that made sense. He wasn't my first thought when they were like, we need a middle of the order bat, but it was like, all right, looking at the numbers and looking at the season he's had, that seems fine. And then he tanked when he got here. But
he's killing it with Washington this year, by the way, after the Nationals picked
him. And Ramos is doing great with the Mets too. So Howie Kendrick is still doing great with the Nationals.
Yeah, but as far as pitchers go, which is the part of this, that's the weapon Gabe Kapler wants to wield more than anything, to the point that he feels like, and this is what we talked about on Continued Success, that it feels like he's trying to use a bullpen he doesn't have, a bullpen with the skill that it just doesn't have out there. And Klentak did acquire some new pitchers, and none of them are really helping out too much. So that needs to be a focus moving forward, you know, like maybe reconsidering what they value among pitchers, or go after guys who are a little higher caliber just in general than your Mike Morins and your what was the other guy? Who was the other guy they acquired? When you have a reliever who you have to have your catcher publicly explain he wasn't grimacing at the entrance of into a game.
I liked it better when he was, though.
You're not acquiring real talent. Like, come on. You know you got to be doing a better job. And thus far, you know, maybe it's been bad luck. Maybe it's been injuries. And it definitely in some cases has been. But maybe the way this team looks at pitching talent as it picks it up off the market isn't great. And they need to correct that, because it's the part of this team Gabe Kapler wants to manage more than anything else. And he just doesn't have it.
Yeah. And I think you guys were right. I agree with you guys. I don't think Kapler is getting let go after this year. I think they'll use you mentioned some other reasons why, but I think it's going to be they'll point to the injuries and say this is the main reason why, if they fall short of the postseason, that they didn't make it, was all of the injuries that they suffered this year. And so that remains to be seen. And in fact, we're going to take a quick break and we're just going to answer just a couple of quick mailbag questions that came in on Sunday after the game, talk about a couple of those no-name, nondescript relief pitchers you were just talking about, and a couple other things. We'll do that next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. Before we move on to the mailbag, we would be remiss if we didn't pass along this tweet from Zionist Williamson at UU Blog. Tweeted this little nugget out. Talking about Mickey Callaway wanting to avoid Mike Morin at all costs, get him out of the game because of Mike Morin's prowess as a relief pitcher. In his brief Phillies career, Mike Morin has faced the Mets 4 times. They are 6-for-10 against Morin, the Mets are, with 2 walks. Morin has allowed 6 runs in 1 2/3 innings against the Mets for a 32.40 ERA. And Mickey Callaway wanted them not to face him anymore. And then he added a little, Mickey Callaway is the dumbest mother effer in baseball, as part of that tweet.
Because he is. That is just mind-boggling.
Oh, that's beautiful. Justin passed that along to us here during the show. I put that up as a little tweet. That was, thank you, Justin. That made my night.
Yeah.
Listen, it could be worse.
It could be worse. Yes, that's
this,
right.
This, you know, could be our manager.
And I think the Phillies are going to have some serious conversations about Gabe Kapler after the season.
And I'm sure he'll do exactly what he did from last year to this year, which is change to the very letter and not necessarily in the spirit of all of the criticisms.
But it will be all for it will be all mood if they end up the Phillies end up making the postseason here.
Stop it.
So
this all gets wiped away if they. I just want to remind people that this all disappears if they make the postseason.
Absolutely,
they get to say they're a playoff team, and you know, make adjustments based on that.
100% right. A couple other quick things before we move on to the mailbag.
Baseball.
It's the worst sport ever. There's really no doubt about it.
You guys know there's a football game on right now.
That's right. What are we doing? And you know, just to also to further cement the fact that baseball is the worst sport ever, Sunday's game between the Phillies and Mets was the second longest nine-inning game in Phillies history, 1 minute shy of the four-and-a-half-hour game the Phillies played in Pittsburgh last year, which set the National League record. The Phillies game today started 10 minutes after Eagles kickoff and ended an hour and a half after the Eagles game was over. Baseball in September is just the best.
Next year, the rosters will be smaller and there will be nothing.
This won't be a thing.
There'll be nothing anyone can do.
That'll be much
nicer. I'm sure things will stay the same somehow.
Yeah, yeah. All right, let's go to the mailbag. And just a couple here to finish things off. This was a funny one from Michael Finn at mfinn10083. Listen, folks on Twitter, why are we putting the numbers in on our handles? I'm just asking. I mean, we've got to come up with something better because I read these things sometime, and it's mfinn93qxr235. We got to 86 the numbers. If mfin is taken, and there are 10,082 other mfins on Twitter, you got to come up with something.
And for the record, I was laughing because I know what this question is.
Yes. Michael asks, explain the differences between Parker, Morin, Hughes, Vincent. You need to get Ronald Acuna Jr. out, and these are your options. In what order would you trot them out of the bullpen?
I just want to say one thing before we begin. Did you know that in the month of July, Ronald Acuna hit 22 home runs?
Oh, Jesus.
Did you really?
And that in the month of July, the Philadelphia Phillies hit 33 home runs? So
see,
my answer to this is, You're not going to get him.
It doesn't matter which one you send out. And I'll tell you, I can't tell you any of their first names.
It's definitely not Nick Vincent.
Phil Parker.
No, Nick Vincent.
Andrew Morin. Yeah. No, I know that one's Mike. No. How about Hugo? Hugo Hughes.
Hugo Hughes would be good. I like that one. Or Hugo Parker, actually. Sounds like the name of a board game company.
And let's say Vincent.
Well, when I said Vincent there, I initially thought they were talking about Velasquez, but no, there's no way Nick Vincent should be the last pitcher to finish off a game. I mean, those two losses where Nick Vincent was the losing pitcher, you're not thinking, but I mean, you're right when you've got...
He just seems like he's being put in the game because he is available. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't tell me that Gabe Kapler felt like he was the... I mean, I know it was an extra inning walk-off scenario that he last right? Am I imagining that wrong?
Well, there was two. The extra inning walk-off was in Cincinnati, and then he was the losing pitcher in New York when he walked in the winning run. Mm.
So is he the product of there's no other options at that moment based on the matchup Gabe Kapler wants to play? I mean, even if so,
bullpen matchup going on with these guys. These guys all stink against both right-handers and left-handers.
Exactly.
Just stop it.
Yes.
Use your best guys for as long as you can, and then if you got to use these guys, that's fine. But frankly, we hate Nick Pivetta around here now with how he's played this year. But Nick Pivetta's got to be getting more high-leverage starts than more high-leverage innings than Nick Vincent.
Right, and if you have a better bullpen with better pitchers in it, go ahead and play the matchups to your heart's content.
Sure.
Not Gabe Kapler's heart's content, because then you get another record-setting length of a baseball game. But you know, that's if you have better weapons at your disposal, then absolutely put the best guy for the job out there. But this is a bullpen that is just a a whirring blender of nonsense names that I can't imagine of those four guys we just mentioned, any one of them is really significantly better situationally than the other. Like, it doesn't matter which arm they're throwing with. Like, maybe the hitter gets thrown off throwing against lefties, but I don't know, man. From what we've seen in Nick Vincent, I think if you asked what his job was, they would be like, well, he provides bullpen depth, which, as we've said time and time again on this podcast this year, means nothing if you're not a good baseball player.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing, is like whether you're a position player like Sean Rodriguez or a relief pitcher like Nick Vincent, basically the last guy on the roster, you should not be putting yourself in a position to ask him to have to do that. Whatever you have to do as manager, unless you're in the 15th inning, to avoid putting a pitcher like that in a position like that, you have to do it. And that's not what Gabe Kapler has done so far. He's been trying to play the matchups throughout the course of innings 6, 7, 8, 9, and you get down to it, your 10th pitcher is Nick Vincent, you know, and that's how it's been going. So no, I'm not going to organize these guys by what order I would trot them out, because it really doesn't matter. I think the only thing I would say is Blake Parker would probably be the one I would hope to rely on the most, only because he has had the most success in the past. He's at least saved games in the past, but you know,
did you see him give up a home run to a pitcher a couple days ago?
Oh, woof.
Yeah, I did see that. And Michael Lorenzen's a special
pitcher.
Yeah,
he's different.
Yes, he is.
Nevertheless, yeah. Brian Cole at Delco_Brian asked, after Nola starts on Monday, wouldn't Spencer Howard be a fine choice to start on Tuesday? And I discussed this with Matt Winkleman a little bit on Hit and Season number 316, and he gave some compelling reasons why you probably shouldn't bring Spencer Howard up, just because it might mess with how they want to use him this offseason and for 2020. But, you know, I'm at the point now where I would bring him up and make a couple of starts here in the month of September. And if that means he doesn't pitch in the Arizona Fall League, then that's fine. But what do you guys think about Spencer Howard, because I don't think they should use him as a relief pitcher. I think that would foul things up. He's got, you know, he's ramped up to 99, 100 pitches. He can give you 6 or 7 innings. You know, now that Redding season is Redding season over? I think Redding season is over. Bringing Spencer Howard up to make a spot start on Tuesday, Liz, would you be in favor of that, or would you just rather not bother exposing him at this point in the season?
I would bring him up because it would keep me interested. It is something that I personally want to see.
That's as good a reason as any. Watching this game for entertainment purposes.
Yes. I would love to see him. I'd like to see him do well. It's cool and fun when the Phillies bring up a prospect and say, hey, come start in September, and they're in a playoff game. Like, this is when you bring up a dude who could do something like this. You bring him up now. Like, remember David Price in 2008? They didn't bring him up then. But he was the reliever. Yeah. I'm not saying they should use Spencer Howard like that. But I'm saying bring up guys with potential to see what they can do. Like, who cares about starting his clock? And I'm sure that wasn't Matt's reason for not wanting to bring it up.
No.
I'm sure it was nuanced and intelligent and completely, you know, opposed to.
Yeah, it has to do with innings and stuff
like
that.
Yes, it's opposed to my answer of yes, because it would be fun. So
I'm in favor of fun. Justin, do you like fun?
I hate it. That's why I do this. first of all, you mentioned the Arizona Fall League. This is the most interesting, by the way, contingent of Arizona Fall League participants the Phillies have had in a long time. Spencer Howard being a part of that. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I'm sure Matt's reasons are far more intelligent than, like, me want Spencer Howard, but, like, you know, that's kind of what I'm at this point. You know, if he's going to help the team in a tight wild card ring.
He's not one of the guys we've been seeing.
Let's introduce him to people. Let us know what he looks like, because, you know, people who don't follow the farm system as regularly aren't going to even really know who he is beyond a name in the paper and maybe a stat sheet. But beyond that, I'll take the other side of it, just because I don't want us to all agree all the time. The Phillies have precious little talent, higher, almost major league ready talent coming out of their farm system right now. And anything that you think exposes a guy to potentially crippling the development that they've set forth for him from this point forward, this is not the season to sacrifice a young pitcher for. You know, in that season, the Rays were on their way to the World Series. This, and obviously they didn't know that, but clearly they were a team capable of making the World Series. This team, if it falls ass backwards into a wild card spot, I still don't think is capable of going all the way and winning the World Series or getting to the World Series. So I don't know if changing the direction, changing the flight plan for one of the best Phillies prospects at the moment is worth it, because they're two games out of a wild card spot they've been trying to reclaim for the last, you know, 4 months.
Last question from our very own Ethan Witte at The Good Fight, at Ethan_Witte. And make sure you're reading Ethan's stuff at The Good Fight. He does a great job. But he asked, what does Gabe have to do through the end of the season to make you feel better about him as a manager heading into 2020? And assuming he'll be back, of course. And there was one other stat that I wanted to throw out there. The Phillies have used more players this season than any other team in history. Which is an indication of how injured they are. The last time the team that set the previous record, I think it was 54 players, or maybe it was 53, and this year's team used 54, was 1996, that awful season where the Phillies had one All-Star representative, where they lost, I think, 97 games that year. Most teams, when they have this many players play a game for them, are last-place teams. And I need to look up exactly the number. The fact the Phillies are not a last-place team, are actually over 500, is pretty incredible. I don't know, though, that that's enough. I don't know that the injuries and the excuses are enough. So, Liz, since I think you're I think you are probably the most out there on displeasure for Gabe Kapler among the three of us, although neither of us are singing, none of us are singing his praises at this point. What does Gabe have? Is there anything he can do through the end of the season, these last 17 games or these last 20 games, to make you feel better?
Unless I can say change everything about him and how he manages, I'm going to say no. I don't think there's anything he can do. I just don't think I like the way he manages. I've always had problems with his history and the things that he is accused of, you know, how he is accused of handling things in Los Angeles. I just don't like it. I've been willing to give him a lot of chances and cut him a lot of slack, and I think I'm kind of done. I'm kind of done with it. It's taken me a long time to get here, but I'm ready to move on. There's really nothing he can do for me to feel better about him managing in 2020. He's going to be back. I can pretty much guarantee it, and it's just going to be something I have to get through.
How about you, Justin?
No, I feel similarly about this stuff in his history that is now, you know, when those things came to light, it really changed the filter through which, you know, you view somebody after stories like that come out. But in regards to what we talked about during this episode, you know, if this was a couple of months ago, my answer would be to the question would be, you know, if he just is able to overcome the issues we're talking about and sort of be more open to changing, which he's claimed on multiple occasions when he was first hired, when this season started, when Andy McPhail was like, oh, we're going to sit down and have a conversation. We're going to talk about how to talk about the team to the press and how to like keep from frustrating fans by being positive all the time. And he kept bringing up how open he is to communication, how open he is to evolve. And it was just this idea that's like, you know what, regardless of what he's doing in the moment, it's a healthy mindset to have. And it's good to hear from your manager. Like, that's great. That's a great way to be, because when you have a blind adherence to any one particular style, you're going to run into roadblocks along the way. And maybe there'll be a little fewer and you'll look really smart. Maybe there'll be a lot and you'll look really dumb. But I think at this point, there's just not time left. Like, it's too late in this season for him to do anything to change our view of him. And if anything, I'm more demoralized than ever, because he's doing the same things that he was doing at the beginning and proving that he doesn't buy into that it's kind of all for show, that there is no open-mindedness. There is no, oh, that didn't work, let's try something else. It really is just kind of really rigid thinking that we've seen from him. And that's really disappointing. So I don't think he has the real estate left to change my mind.
I mean, I think 20 games is not enough to see it. To see, I mean, if whatever you think of Gabe Kapler, however you've made up your mind, and I'm talking to everybody listening to this podcast too, 20 games isn't going to change your mind. Now, if this team goes, you know, on a 15-5 run against these really good teams, he's not going anywhere. I mean, that's just the bottom line. And you know, maybe he doesn't make any gaffes along the way. And it's possible if they go 15-5, he's probably made a lot of good moves. He's probably made a lot of smart decisions along the way. But 20 games good or bad is not enough of a lens to change anyone's mind as far as I'm concerned. And so, you know, it's just whatever you think that he has done this year and last year. I mean, at this point, that's what it is. And I don't know that there's really anything he can do in these last 20 games except get the team to the playoffs. However that has to happen in order for him to
by using,
you know, in order for anybody's
pitchers.
Mind to be changed by using 8 million pitchers and these games going 4.5 hours long. But I think if they win, we're not going to care how long the games are necessarily. We might not watch all of them. We might not make it through the whole thing. But anyway, we do end this podcast feeling at least that there's a reason to watch this team here over the next week at least and see how they do against Atlanta. They got a couple of series, a home and an away series coming up against the Braves, and they get the Red Sox this week as well. So we'll see the Phillies playing some good baseball teams. They seem to have done better playing good baseball teams this year than lousy baseball. Maybe this is just what this team needed, to play good baseball teams and not have to worry about a letdown. Of course, that probably means the Phillies will hold a one-game lead in the wild card and going into the final three-game series against the Marlins and then get swept.
Oh, God.
But you just know that that's a possibility.
I will throw up.
I mean, that is such a real possibility that it just has to happen. But the Phillies have given us a reason to keep watching over these last 3 weeks. And so,
and John has given you a reason to turn it off and run away.
We will keep. Yeah, that's right. That could very well be how this all works out. But stick with us for these last few weeks here. The 2019 regular season is almost over, and then there will be no Phillies baseball left for anybody. So hopefully we'll see this team go on and play some competent baseball over the last few weeks, and maybe that means a wild card berth. But that'll do it for episode number 317 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Justin and Liz for once again coming on the podcast. And just a reminder, everybody, if you haven't subscribed to the Good Fight podcast feed, I don't know how you're hearing this podcast because pretty much everybody who listens to this podcast is subscribed. But
weird.
Yeah, kind of it would be weird. Go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts, and hit that subscribe button and leave a rating and a review if you get a chance on Apple Podcasts. And don't forget to check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season for some bonus content there, and you can support the podcast there as well. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.